ground with an incredulous look.
Like this isn't stressful enough without you insulting them? Rhi asks.
I need to defuse this quickly.
I mean, it could be worse. We could be walking past a line of wyvern, right? Oh, please, Violet, do give us one of your nervous babble story times, Lucas says sarcastically. Let me guess, wyvern or some elite squad of griffin riders created because of something we did at a battle only you can manage to remember with your scribe brain?
You don't know what a wyvern is? Rhi asks, then begins walking again. Didn't your parents tell you bedtime stories, Luca?
Do enlighten me, Luca drawls.
I roll my eyes, continuing along the path. They're folklore, I say over my shoulder. Kind of like dragons, but bigger, with 2 feet instead of 4. A mane of razor-sharp feathers streaking down their necks, and a taste for humans. Unlike dragons, who think we're a little gamey. My mom used to love telling my sister Reagan and me that we'd be plucked right off the front porch by one if we talked back. And their eerie-eyed venin riders would take us prisoner if we took treats we weren't allowed to have, Rhi says, flashing a grin at me. And I can't help but notice that her step is lighter.
Mine is too. I notice each dragon as we pass, but my heartbeat steadies.
My dad used to read me those fables every night, I tell her. And I seriously asked him one time if Mom was going to turn into a venin because she could channel. Rhiannon chuckles as we walk by a set of glaring reds.
Did he tell you people supposedly only turn into venin if they channel directly from the source?
He did, but it was after my mom had a really long night while we were stationed near the eastern border, and her eyes were bloodshot red, so I freaked out and started shrieking. I can't help but smile at the memory. She took my books of fables away for a month because the outpost guards all came running, and I was hiding behind my brother who couldn't stop laughing, and, well, it was a mess. I keep my eyes front and center as a large orange sniffs the air when I pass. Rhiannon's shoulders shake with laughter.
I wish we'd had a book like that. I seriously think Mom just altered the stories to scare us whenever we stepped out of line.
That sounds like some border village nonsense, Luca scoffs. Venin? Wyvern? Anyone with a modicum of education knows that our wards stop all magic that isn't channeled directly from dragons.
They're stories, Luca, Rhi says over her shoulder, and I can't help but notice how much ground we've covered.
Prior, you can walk a little faster if you want up there.
Maybe we should slow down and take our time, Prior suggests from ahead of Rhiannon, rubbing his palms along the sides of his uniform. Or, I guess we can go faster if we want to get out of here. A red steps out of line, putting one claw forward toward us, and my stomach drops to the ground from the weight of the dread filling my entire body.
No, 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 I whisper, freezing in place, but it's too late. The red opens its mouth, exposing sharp, glistening fangs, and fire erupts along the sides of its tongue, streaming through the air and into the path ahead of Rhiannon. She yells in shock. Heat blasts the front of my face. Then, it's over. The scent of sulfur and burned grass, burned something, fills my lungs, and I see a charred patch of ground in front of Rhiannon that hadn't been there before.
Are you all right, Rhi? I call forward. She nods, but the movement is hurried and jerky. Prior's dead. My mouth waters like I'm going to vomit, but I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth until the feeling passes.
Keep walking, Sawyer shouts from farther down the path.
It's all right, Rhi. You just have to...
She just has to what? Walk over his corpse? Is there a corpse?
Fire's out, Rhiannon says over her shoulder. I nod because there's nothing I can say to reassure her.
Holy shit, are we insignificant.
She walks forward and I follow, maneuvering around the pile of ash that used to be Pryor.
Oh my gods, the smell, Luca complains.
Could you please have some level of decency? I snap, turning around to level a glare at her, but Riddick's face makes me pause. His eyes are as wide as saucers and his mouth hangs open.
Violet!
It's a whisper, and I wonder briefly if I heard him as much as I saw the word forming on his lips.
Vi!
A warm huff of steam blows against the back of my neck. My heart thunders, the beat increasing erratically as I take what might be my last breath and turn toward the line of dragons. The golden eyes of not one, but two greens meet mine, consuming my field of vision.
Oh, fuck.
To approach a green dragon, lower your eyes in supplication and wait for their approval. That's what I read, right? I drop my gaze as one chuffs another breath at me. It's hot and appallingly wet, but I'm not dead yet, so that's a plus. The one on the right chortles deep in its throat. Wait, is that the sound of approval I'm looking for? Shit, I wish I'd asked Mira. Mira. She's going to be devastated when she reads the rolls. I lift my head and suck in a sharp breath. They're even closer. The one on the left nudges my hands with its giant nose, but I somehow stand my ground, rocking back on my heels to keep from falling over. Greens are the most reasonable. I cut my hands climbing the obstacle course. I lift my palms like they can see through the black fabric binding my wounds. The one on the right sets its nose right at my breasts and chuffs again.
What the hell?
It inhales, making that noise in its throat, and the other shoves its nose into my ribs, making me raise my arms just in case they feel like taking a little nibble.
Violet! Rhiannon whisper shouts. I'm all right! I call back, then wince, hoping I didn't just seal my fate by screaming in their ears.
Another chuff, another chortle, like they're talking to each other as they sniff me. The one under my arm moves its nostril to my back and sniffs again. Realization hits as I choke out a tight, surreal laugh.
Oh, you smell tiny, don't you? I ask quietly.
They both draw back, just far enough for me to look them in their golden eyes, but they keep their jaws shut, giving me the courage to keep talking.
I'm Mira's sister, Violet.
Slowly lowering my arms, I run my hands over my snot-covered vest and the armor carefully sewn into it.
She collected tiny scales after he'd shed them last year and had them shrunk down so she could sew them into the vest to help keep me safe.
The one on the right blinks. The one on the left sticks its nose in again, sniffing loudly.
The scales have saved me a few times, I whisper, but no one else knows they're in there, just Mira and Tiny.
They both blink at me, and I lower my gaze, bowing my head because it feels like the thing to do. Professor Kaori taught us every way to approach a dragon and exactly zero ways to disengage one. Step by step, they retreat until I see them take up their places in line in my peripherals, and I finally raise my head. Taking several deep breaths, I try to lock my muscles to keep from trembling.
Violet! Rhiannon is only a few feet away, a look of terror in her eyes. She must have been right behind their heads. I'm fine! I force a smile and nod. I have dragon scale armor under the vest, I whisper. They smell my sister's dragon.
If she wants trust, there it is.
Please don't tell anyone. I won't, she whispers. You're all right?
Other than having a few years of my life shaved off? I laugh. The sound is shaky, bordering on hysteria.
Let's get out of here, she swallows, her gaze darting toward the line of dragons.
Good idea. She turns and walks back to her place. And once there's 15 feet between us, I follow.
I think I just shat myself, Riddick says, and my laughter only pitches higher as we move through the field.
Honestly, I thought they were going to eat you,
Luca remarks.
Me too, I admit.
I wouldn't have blamed them, she continues.
You're insufferable, Riddick calls back.
I focus on the path and keep walking.
What? She's obviously our weakest link after Pryor, and I don't blame them for snuffing him out, she argues. He could never make a decision, and no one wants someone like that as their rider.
A blast of heat singes my back, and I halt.
Don't be Riddick. Don't be.
Guess the dragons think she's insufferable, too,
Riddick mutters. Our squad is down to 6 first years. Chapter 13. A quote from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
There is nothing quite as humbling or as awe-inspiring as witnessing threshing.
For those who live through it, anyway.
October 1st is always threshing. Monday, Wednesday, or Sunday. It doesn't matter where it falls on any given year. On the 1st of October, the first-year cadets of the Riders Quadrant enter the bowl-shaped forested valley to the southwest of the Citadel and pray they come out alive. I will not die today. I didn't bother eating this morning, and I pity Riddick, who's currently heaving up the contents of his stomach against a tree to my right. A sword is strapped to Rhiannon's back, the hilt jostling against her spine as she bounces, stretching her arms across her chest, one at a time.
Remember to listen here, Professor Kaori says from in front of the 147 of us here, tapping his chest. If a dragon has already selected you, they'll be calling.
He thumps his chest again.
So pay attention to not just your surroundings, but your feelings, and go with them.
He grimaces.
And if your feelings are telling you to go in the other direction, listen to that, too.
Which one are you going for?
Rhiannon asks quietly.
I don't know. I shake my head, but can't ditch the feeling of absolute failure in my chest. At this point, Mira knew she wanted to seek out Tiny.
You memorized the cards, right? She asks, lifting her brows. So you know what's out there?
Yes. I just don't feel connected to any of them. Which is better than feeling connected to a dragon another rider has their eye on. I have no desire to fight to the death today.
Dane tried talking me into a brown.
Dane lost his vote when he tried talking you into leaving, she counters.
There's a lot of truth to that. I've only talked to him once in the past 2 days since presentation. And he tried to get me to run within the first 5 minutes. We've only seen professors this morning, but I know the second and third year riders are scattered throughout the valley in order to observe.
What about you?
She grins.
I'm thinking about that green, the one closest to me when they all got up close and personal with you.
Well, it didn't eat you, so that's a promising start. I smile despite the fear racing through my veins.
I think so, too.
She links her arm with mine, and I focus back on what Professor Kaori is telling us.
If you go in groups, you're more likely to be incinerated than bonded, Professor Kaori argues with someone near the center of the valley. The scribes have run the statistics. You're better off on your own.
And what if we aren't chosen by dinner? A man with a short beard to my left asks.
Looking past him, I catch Jack Barlow running a finger across his neck at me. So original. Then Orin and Tynan flank his sides. So much for squad loyalty. It's everyone for themselves today.
If you're not chosen by nightfall, there's a problem, Professor Kaori responds, his thick mustache turned down at the ends. You'll be brought out by a professor or senior leadership. So don't give up and think we've forgotten about you.
He checks his pocket watch.
Remember to spread out and use every foot of this valley to your advantage. It's 9, which means they should be flying in any minute now. The only other words I have for you are good luck.
He nods,
sweeping his gaze over the crowd of us with such intensity that I know he'll be able to recreate this moment in a projection. Then he leaves, marching up the hill to our right and disappearing into the trees. My mind whirls. It's time. I'll either leave this forest as a rider, or likely never leave. Be careful, Rhiannon pulls me into a hug, her braids swinging over my shoulder as she tightens her arms around me. You too, I squeeze her back, and am immediately swept into another pair of arms. Don't die, Riddick orders. That's our only goal. As what's left of our squad separates, each heading in our own direction, like we've been flung apart by centrifugal motion, at the mercy of a spinning wheel. Guessing by the position of the sun, it's been at least a couple of hours since the dragons flew overhead, landing in the valley in a succession that sounded like thunder and making the earth shake. I've come across two greens, a brown, four oranges, and my heart stumbles and my feet freeze to the forest floor as a red steps into my field of vision, its head just under the canopy of enormous trees. This is not my dragon. I'm not sure how I know, but I do. I hold my breath, trying not to make a sound as its head sweeps right, then left, and my gaze plummets to the ground as I bow my head. For the last hour or so, I've seen dragons launch into the air with a cadet, now a rider, on their back. But I've also seen more than a couple of plumes of smoke, and I have no desire to be one of those. The dragon huffs a breath, then continues along its path, its club tail flicking upward and catching one of the lower-hanging branches. The limb falls to the ground with a monstrous crash, and only after the footsteps recede do I finally raise my head. I've now come across every color of dragon, and none of them has spoken to me or given me the sense of connection we're reportedly supposed to feel. My stomach sinks. What if I'm one of the cadets who's destined to never become a rider? One who's thrown back time and again to restart first year until eventually something puts me on the death roll? Has this all been for nothing? The thought is too heavy to carry. Maybe if I could just see the valley, then I'd get a feeling like Professor Kaori was talking about. I spot the nearest climbable tree and get to work, scaling branch after branch. Pain radiates from my hands, but I don't let it distract me, the bark catching the wraps that still cover my palms. Now that's an annoyance that makes me pause every few feet and pull the cloth free of the bark. Pretty sure the higher branches aren't going to support my weight, so I stop about three quarters to the top and survey the immediate area. There are a few greens in plain sight to my left, standing out against the fall foliage. Oddly enough, this is the one time of year when oranges, browns, and reds have the highest chance of blending in. I watch the trees for movement and spot a couple more directly south, but there's no pull, no aching need to head in that direction, which probably means those aren't mine either. Relief hits me embarrassingly hard when I count at least half a dozen first years wandering aimlessly. I shouldn't be so happy that they haven't found their dragons either, but at least I'm not the only one, which gives me hope. There's a clearing to the north, and my eyes narrow as a flash, like a mirror, catches the sun. Or like a golden dragon. Guess the little feather tail is still out here appeasing its curiosity. But I'm apparently not going to find my dragon up a tree, so I climb down carefully and as quietly as possible. My feet hit the ground just before voices approach, and I tuck myself against the trunk to hide from being seen. We're not supposed to be in groups. I'm telling you, I think I saw it headed this way. It's a cocky voice I immediately recognize as Tynan. You'd better be right, because if we just hiked all the way the fuck over here just to find nothing, I'm going to run you through. My stomach twists. It's Jack,
No one else's voice has that physical effect on me, not even Zayden's.
You sure we shouldn't be spending our time looking for our own dragons instead of hunting the freak down?
Recognition tickles the edges of my mind, but I lean out from my hiding place just to be sure. Yep, it's Orin. I dart back behind the cover of the tree as the trio passes, each strapped with a deadly sword. There are 9 daggers tucked against my body in various places, so it's not like I'm unarmed, but I feel tragically disadvantaged by my inability to wield a sword effectively. They're just too damned heavy. Wait, what did they say they were doing? Hunting?
It's not like our dragons are going to bond any other riders, Jack snaps. They'll wait for us. This has to be done. That scrawny one is going to get someone killed. We have to take it out.
Nausea swirls in my stomach, and my fingernails bite into my palms. They're going to try and kill the little golden one.
If we get caught, we're fucked, Orin comments.
That's an understatement. I can't imagine dragons would take kindly to killing one of their own. But they seem to be focused on culling the weak from the herd in our species, so it's not a stretch to imagine they do the same with their own.
Then you'd better shut your mouth so no one hears us, Tynan counters, his voice rising in that mocking tone that makes me want to punch him in the face. It's for the best, Jack argues, his tone dropping. It's unrideable, a certified freak. And you know feathertails are useless in combat. They refuse to fight.
His voice fades as they walk farther away, headed north, toward the clearing.
Shit, I mutter under my breath, even though the assholes are out of hearing range by now.
No one knows anything about feathertails, so I don't know where Jack is getting his information. But I don't have time to focus on his assumptions right now. I have no way of contacting Professor Kaori, and there hasn't even been a hint that the senior riders are watching us, so I can't count on them to stop this madness either. The golden dragon should be able to breathe fire, but what if it can't? There's a chance they won't find it, but shit, I can't even convince myself of that one. They're headed the right way, and that dragon is pretty much a shiny beacon. They'll find it. My shoulders sag, and I sigh at the sky, blowing out a frustrated breath. I can't just stand here and do nothing. You can get there first and warn it.
Solid plan. And way better than option 2, where I'd be forced to take on 3 armed men with at least a combined 200 pounds on me.
I keep my footsteps silent and race across the forest floor at a slightly different angle than Jack's little posse. Thankful I grew up playing hide-and-seek with Dane in the woods. This is one area of expertise I can confidently claim. They've got a head start on me, and the clearing is closer than I realized, so I kick up my speed, my gaze darting between the leaf-covered path I've chosen and where I think, scratch that, where I know they are toward the left. I can make out their lumbering shapes in the distance. I hear a pop, and the ground falls out from under me. Then rushes for my face. My hands fly out to brace myself a second before I slam into the forest floor. I bite into my lower lip to keep from crying out as my ankle screams. Popping isn't good. It's never good. Glancing back, I curse at the fallen branch hidden by fall foliage that's just wrecked my ankle. Shit. Block the pain. Block it. But there's no mental trick to keep the shooting agony from turning my stomach as I drag myself to my knees and rise carefully, keeping my weight on my left ankle. There's nothing to do but limp the final dozen feet to the clearing, gritting my teeth the whole way. The tinge of satisfaction that I beat Jack here is almost enough to make me smile. The meadow is big enough for 10 dragons, ringed by several large trees, but the golden one stands alone in the center. Like it's trying to get a suntan. It's just as beautiful as I remember. But unless it can breathe fire, it's a sitting duck.
You have to get out of here, I hiss from the cover of the trees, knowing it should be able to hear me. They're going to kill you if you don't leave.
Its head pivots toward me, then tilts at an angle that makes my own neck hurt.
Yes, I whisper loudly. You, Goldie!
It blinks its golden eyes and swishes its tail.
You have to be fucking kidding me.
Go! Run! Fly!
I shoo at it. Then remember, it's a god's damned dragon capable of shredding me with its claws alone, and I drop my hands.
This is not going well. It's going the opposite of well. The trees rustle from the south, and Jack steps into the clearing, his sword swaying in his right hand. A step later, he's flanked by Orin and Tynan, both their weapons drawn. Shit, I mutter, my chest tightening. This is now officially going horribly. The golden dragon's head snaps in their direction, a low growl rumbling in its chest.
We'll make it painless, Jack promises, like that makes the murder acceptable.
Scorch them, I whisper shout, my heart pounding as they draw closer. But the dragon doesn't, and somehow, I'm certain in the marrow of my bones that it can't. Other than its teeth, it's defenseless against three trained warriors. It's going to die just because it's smaller, weaker than the other dragons. Just like me. My throat closes. The dragon backs up, its growl growing louder as it bares its teeth. Stomach pitching. I have that parapet feeling again. Whatever I do next has overwhelming odds of ending my life. And yet I'm still going to do it because this is wrong.
You can't do this!
I take the first step into the shin-high grass, and Jack's attention swings my way. My ankle has a heartbeat of its own, and agony streaks up my spine, chattering my teeth as I force my weight onto my ruined joint so they won't see me limping. They can't know I'm hurt, or they'll just attack faster. One at a time, I stand a chance of holding them off long enough for the dragon to escape, but together, don't think about it.
Ho-ho, look, Jack grins, pointing his sword my way. We can take out both the weakest links at the same time.
He looks at his friends and laughs, pausing their advance. Each step hurts worse than the last, but I make it to the center of the clearing, putting myself between Jack's group and the golden dragon.
Been waiting a long time for this, Sorengale. He walks forward slowly.
If you can fly, now would be a good time. I shout over my shoulder at the small dragon, drawing two daggers from the sheaths at my ribs. The dragon chuffs. So helpful.
You can't kill a dragon, I try reasoning, shaking my head at the trio, fear lacing my veins with adrenaline.
Sure we can, Jack shrugs,
but Orin looks a little uncertain, so I pin my gaze on him as they spread out slightly about a dozen feet away, setting up the perfect formation for an attack.
You can't, I say directly to Orin. It goes against everything we believe in.
He flinches. Jack doesn't.
Letting something so weak, so incapable of fighting, live is against our beliefs,
Jack shouts, and I know he's not just talking about the dragon.
You're going to have to get through me then.
My heart thunders against my ribs as I raise my daggers, flipping one to pinch the tip so I'm ready to throw and measuring the 20 or so feet separating me from my attackers.
I don't really consider that a problem, Jack snarls.
They all lift their swords, and I draw a deep breath, readying myself to fight. This isn't the mat. There are no instructors, no yielding, nothing to stop them slaughtering me. Slaughtering us.
I would strongly recommend you rethink your actions.
A voice. His voice. Demands from across the field to my right. My scalp prickles as each of our heads swivel in his direction. Zayden is leaning against the tree, his arms folded across his chest, and behind him, watching with narrowed golden eyes, her fangs exposed, is Sigale, his terrifying navy blue dagger tail.
Chapter 14.
A quote from Navarre, An Unedited History by Colonel Lewis Markham.
In the 6 centuries of recorded history of dragon and rider, there have been hundreds of known cases where a dragon simply cannot emotionally recover from the loss of their bonded rider. This happens when the bond is particularly strong and, in 3 documented cases, has even caused the untimely death of the dragon.
Zayden. For the first time, the sight of him fills my chest with hope. He won't let this happen.
He might hate me, but he's a wing leader. He can't just watch them kill a dragon.
But I know the rules probably better than anyone else in this quadrant. He has to.
Bile rises in my throat, and I tilt my chin to quell the burning.
What Zayden wants, which is always debatable, doesn't matter here. He can only observe, not interfere. I'm going to have an audience for my death.
Fantastic.
So much for hope.
And if we don't want to rethink our actions, Jack shouts.
Zayden looks toward me, and I swear I can see his jaw clench, even from this far away.
Hope is a fickle, dangerous thing. It steals your focus and aims it toward the possibilities, instead of keeping it where it belongs, on the probabilities.
Zayden's words come back to me with alarming clarity, and I rip my gaze from his and concentrate on the 3 probabilities in front of me.
There's nothing you can do, right, wing leader? Jack bellows.
Guess he knows the rules, too.
It's not me you should worry about today,
Zayden responds, and Sigale tilts her head, nothing but menace in her eyes when I glance over.
You really going to do this? I ask Tynan. Attack a squadmate?
Squads don't mean shit today, he seethes, menace curling his lips into a sinister smile.
So I guess that's a no on the flying, I toss over my shoulder again, and the golden dragon chuffs low in its throat in response. Great, well, if you can back me up with those claws, I'd really appreciate it.
It chuffs twice, and I spare a glance down at its claws. Or should I say, paws?
Oh, fucking hell. You don't have any claws?
I turn back to the 3 men just as Jack roars a battle cry and sprints toward me. I don't hesitate. I whip my blade across the rapidly closing space between us, and the dagger finds its mark in the shoulder of his sword arm. His sword falls as he hits his knees, crying out this time in pain.
Good.
But Orin and Tynan have charged at the same time, and they're almost on me. I fling my 2nd dagger at Tynan and catch him in the thigh, slowing but not stopping him. Orin swings for my neck and I duck, unsheathing another blade and slicing him along the ribs just like I did during our challenge. My ankle isn't going to let me kick or even land a decent punch, so it's up to my blades. He recovers quickly and pivots with the sword, catching me at my stomach in a clean slice that would eviscerate me if not for Mira's armor. Instead, the blade skims the scales, sliding right off.
What the hell? Oren's eyes fly wide. She's destroyed my shoulder, Jack cries, stumbling to his feet and distracting the others. I can't move it.
He clutches the joint and I grin.
That's the thing about having weak joints, I say, palming another blade. You know exactly where to strike.
Kill her,
Jack orders, still clutching his shoulder as he backs away a few steps, then turns and runs in the opposite direction, disappearing into the tree line in no time.
Fucking coward.
Tynan jabs with his sword and I spin away, white-hot pain stealing my sight for a heartbeat before I swipe backward, plunging my dagger into his side, then pivoting, shoving my elbow up into Orin's chin as he attacks, rattling his head.
You fucking bitch!
Tynan screams, pressing his palm against his oozing side.
Such an original...
I take advantage of Orin's dazed expression and slice open his hip.
Insult!
The move costs me, and a scream rips from my throat as Tynan's sword cuts into my upper right arm along the direction of the bone.
The armor keeps it from penetrating my ribs, but I know I'll have a hell of a bruise tomorrow as I wrench myself away, blood flowing freely as I peel myself off the sword.
Behind you, Zayden shouts.
I pivot to see Orin's sword held high, ready to separate my head from my shoulders. But the golden dragon snaps its jaw and Orin stumbles to the side with terror-filled eyes, as if he's just now realized that it has teeth. I sidestep and knock the handle of my blade against the base of his skull. He crumples, unconscious, and I don't wait to see him fall before turning back toward Tynan, who has his bloodied sword ready.
You can't interfere!
Tynan shouts at Zayden, but I don't dare look away from my opponent long enough to see how the wing leader reacts.
No, but I can narrate, Zayden retorts.
He's obviously on my side here, which confuses the hell out of me, since more than anything, I'm certain he wants me dead. But maybe it's not my life he's protecting, but the golden dragon's. I chance a quick glance. Yeah, Sigale looks pissed. Her head undulates in a serpentine motion, a clear sign of agitation, and those narrowed golden eyes of hers are focused on Tynan, who is now trying to circle me like we're on the mat. But I won't let him get between me and the little golden dragon.
Your arm is shot, Soren Gale, Tynan hisses, his face pale and sweaty. I'm used to functioning in pain, asshole. Are you?
I raise the dagger in my right hand just to prove that I can, despite the blood that runs down my arm and drips from the tip of my blade, saturating the wrap across my palm. My gaze drops meaningfully to his side.
I know exactly where I sliced into you. If you don't get to a healer soon, you'll bleed out internally.
Rage contorts his features, and he moves to strike. I try to flick my knife at him, but it slips from my blood-soaked hand and lands with a thud in the grass several feet away. And I know my bravado won't be enough to save me now. My arm is shot. My leg is shot. But at least I made Jack Barlow run away before I died. As a last thought, that's not a bad one. Just as Tynan reaches up to two-hand his sword, preparing for a killing blow, I catch a glimpse of movement to my right. It's Zayden, and rules be damned, he steps forward as though he intends to stop Tynan from killing me. I barely have a moment to register surprise that Zayden would ever save me for any reason, when a gust of wind slams into my back, and I stumble forward onto my destroyed ankle, flinging my arms out to keep my balance and grimacing at the shooting pain. Tynan's mouth hangs open and he staggers backward, his head tilting so far back it's nearly perpendicular to his torso. Shade envelops us both as he continues to back away. Chest heaving, my lungs desperate for air, I chance a look over my shoulder to see why Tynan's retreating. And my heart lurches into my throat. Standing with the golden one tucked under an enormous, scarred black wing is the biggest dragon I've ever seen in my life. The unbonded black dragon Professor Kaori showed us in class. I don't even come close to reaching its ankle. A growl resonates through its chest, vibrating the ground around me as it lowers its gigantic head, baring dripping teeth. Fear ripples through every cell in my body as its hot breath blows over me.
Step aside, Silver One.
A deep, gruff, definitely male voice orders. I blink. Wait. What? Did he just speak to me?
Yes, you. Move.
There's zero room for argument in his tone, and I limp to the side, nearly stumbling over Orin's unconscious body as Tynan breaks into a screaming run, fleeing for the trees. The black dragon's eyes narrow to glare at Tynan, and he opens his mouth wide a second before fire shoots across the field, blasting heat against the side of my face and incinerating everything in its path, including Tynan. Flames crackle at the edges of the blackened path, and I turn slowly to face the dragon, wondering if I'm about to be next. His giant golden eyes study me, but I hold my ground, tilting my chin upward.
You should end the enemy at your feet.
My eyebrows jerk upward. His mouth didn't move. He spoke to me, but his mouth didn't move. Oh, shit. Because he's in my head. I can't kill an unconscious man. I shake my head, though whether it's in protest at his suggestion or a result of my confusion is up for debate.
He would kill you if given the same chance.
I glance down at Oren, still unconscious in the grass beside my feet. It's not like I can argue that astute assessment.
Well, that's a statement on his character, not mine.
The dragon only blinks in response, and I can't quite tell if that's a good thing or not. There's a flash of blue out the corner of my eye, then a whoosh of air as Zayden and Sigale take off, leaving me here with the giant black dragon and the little golden one. Guess Zayden's momentary concern for my life is over. The dragon's giant nostrils flare.
You're bleeding. Stop it.
My arm. It's not that simple when you've been run through with a... I shake my head again. Am I seriously arguing with a dragon? This is so fucking surreal. You know what? That's a great idea. I manage to cut off what remains of my right shirt sleeve and wrap it around the wound, holding one end of the fabric with my teeth as I tie it tight to apply pressure and slow the bleeding. There. Better?
It will do.
He tilts his head at me.
Your hands are bound too. Do you bleed often?
I try not to. He scoffs.
Let's go, Violet Sorengale.
He lifts his head, and the golden dragon peeks out from under his wing. How do you know my name? I gawk up at him.
And to think, I'd almost forgotten just how loquacious humans are.
He sighs, the gust of his breath rattling the trees.
Get on my back.
Oh, shit. He's choosing me. Get on your back? I repeat like a fucking parrot. Have you seen you? Do you have any idea how huge you are? I'd need a damned ladder to get up there. The look he gives me can only be described as annoyance.
One does not live a century without being well aware of the space one takes up. Now, get on.
The golden one moves out from under the shelter of the big one's wing. It's tiny compared to the monstrosity before me, and apparently completely defenseless with the exception of those teeth, like a playful puppy. I can't just leave it, I say. What if Oren wakes up or Jack comes back? The black dragon chuffs. The golden one bends down, flexing its legs, and then launches into the sky, its golden wings catching the sun as it flies off, skimming the tops of the trees. So it can fly. That would have been nice to know 20 minutes ago.
Get on,
the black dragon growls, shaking the ground and trees at the edge of the field. You don't want me, I argue.
I'm not going to tell you again.
Point taken. Fear grasps my throat like a fist, and I hobble over to his leg. This isn't like climbing a tree. There are no handholds, no easy path, just a series of hard-as-stone scales that don't exactly give me a foothold. My ankle and arm aren't doing me any favors either. How the hell am I going to get up there? I raise my left arm and suck in a breath before placing my hand on his front leg. The scales are larger and thicker than my hand and surprisingly warm to the touch. They layer into the next above them in an intricate pattern that leaves no space to grab hold.
You are a rider, are you not?
That seems to be up for debate at the moment. My heart thunders. Is he going to cook me alive for being too slow? A low, frustrated grumble sounds in his chest, and then he shocks me to the core as he stretches forward, his front leg becoming a ramp. Dragons never supplicate for anyone, and yet here he is bowing to make it easier for me to climb on. It's steep, but manageable. I don't hesitate, crawling up his front leg on my hands and knees to balance my weight and spare my ankle, but the strain on my arm has me gasping by the time I climb over his shoulder and reach his back, dodging the pointed spikes that ripple down most of his neck like a mane. Holy shit, I'm on the back of a dragon.
Sit.
I see the seat, the smooth, scaly divot just in front of his wings, and sit, bending my knees like Professor Kaori taught us. Then I grab a hold of the thick ridges of scales we call the pommel, where his neck meets his shoulders. Everything about him is bigger than any model we practiced on. My body isn't built to stay on any dragon, let alone one of his size. There's no way I'll be able to stay seated. This is about to be the first and last ride of my life.
My name is Ternanok, son of Muit-Koydim and Fia Clan Fuel, descended from the cunning Dubmadin line.
He stands to his full height, bringing me eye level with the canopy of trees around the clearing, and I squeeze a little tighter with my thighs.
But I am not going to assume that you'll be able to remember that once we reach the field. So Tern will do until I inevitably have to remind you.
I inhale swiftly, but there's no time to process his name, his history, before he bends slightly and launches us into the sky. It feels like I imagine a stone does after being flung from a catapult, except it takes every ounce of strength I have to stay on this particular stone. Holy shit! The ground falls away as we soar, Tern's enormous wings beating the air into submission and pitching upward. My body lifts off his back, and I dig in with my hands, trying to keep anchored, but the wind, the angle, it's all too much, and my grip falters. My hands slip. Fuck! Scrambling for purchase, my hands rake down Tern's back as I skid past his wings, rapidly approaching the sharp scales of his morning star tail. No, no, no! He banks left, and whatever hope I had of getting a handhold tumbles right off with me. I'm in free fall. Chapter 15.
A quote from page 50, The Book of Brennan.
Just because you survive threshing doesn't mean you'll survive the ride to the flight field. Being chosen isn't the only test, and if you can't hold your seat, then you'll fly straight into the ground. Terror clogs my throat and stutters my heart. Air rushes past me as I plummet toward the mountainous terrain beneath, and the sun catches the scales of the golden one far beneath me. I'm going to die. That's the only possible outcome. Vices clamp around my ribs and over my shoulders, stopping my descent, and my body jerks with whiplash as I'm yanked upward again.
You're making us look bad. Stop it.
I'm clasped in Tern's claws. He's actually caught me, instead of finding me unworthy and letting me fall to my death. It's not like it's easy to stay on your back when you're doing acrobatics, I shout up. He glances down at me, and I swear the ridge above his eye arches.
Simple flight is hardly acrobatics.
There is absolutely nothing simple about you. I wrap my arms around the knuckles of his claws, noting that his sharp talons are draped harmlessly around the sides of my body. He's huge, but he's also careful as he flies us along the mountain. He's one of the deadliest dragons in Navarre. Professor Kaori's lesson. What else had he said? The only unbonded black dragon hadn't agreed to bond this year? He hadn't even been seen in the last 5 years. His rider died in the Tirish Rebellion. Tern swings me upward and then releases me, sending me flying high above him, and I flail. My stomach drops at the height of his toss, and then I fall for 2 heartbeats before Tern rushes up, catching me on his back between his wings.
Now, get in a seat
and actually hold on this time, or no one is going to believe that I've actually chosen you.
He growls.
I still can't believe you've chosen me.
I have half a mind to tell him that getting back to the seat isn't as easy as he's implying, but he levels out and his wings catch the air in a gentle glide, cutting the wind resistance. Inch by inch, I crawl up his back until I reach the seat and settle in again. I hold on to his ridges so hard my hands cramp.
You're going to have to strengthen your legs. Didn't you practice?
Indignation ripples up my spine.
Of course I practiced.
There's no need to shout. I can hear you just fine. The entire mountain can probably hear you.
Was everyone's dragon a curmudgeon or just mine? My eyes widen. I have a dragon, and not just any dragon. I have Ternanach.
Grip harder with your knees. I can barely feel you back there.
I'm trying.
I push my knees in, and the muscles of my thighs tremble as he banks left, softer this time than last, his angle not quite as steep as he changes course in a wide arc, taking us back toward Bazgaeth.
I'm just not as strong as other riders.
I know exactly who and what you are, Violet Sorengale.
My legs shake until they lock, the muscles freezing in place as though bands have been wrapped around them. But there's no pain. I glance over my shoulder and see his Morningstar tail, what feels like miles behind us. He's doing this. He's holding me in place. Guilt settles in my stomach. I should have focused more on strength training for my legs. I should have spent more time preparing myself for this. He shouldn't have to spend his energy on keeping his rider seated.
I'm sorry. I just didn't think I'd make it this far.
A loud sigh resonates through my mind.
I didn't think I would either. So we have that in common.
I sit higher in the seat and look out over the landscape, wind ripping tears from the corners of my eyes. No wonder most riders choose to wear goggles. There are at least a dozen dragons in the air, each putting their rider through a trial of dips and turns. Reds, oranges, greens, browns, the sky is speckled with color. My heart lurches as I see a rider fall from the back of a red sword tail, and unlike Tairn, the dragon doesn't dip to catch the first year. I look away before the body hits the ground.
It's not anyone you know.
That's what I tell myself. Rhiannon, Riddick, Trina, Sawyer, they're all probably safely bonded and already waiting at the field.
We're going to have to put on a show.
Awesome. The idea is anything but.
You will not fall. I will not allow it.
The bands around my legs extend to my hands, and I feel the pulse of invisible energy.
You will trust me.
Not a question, an order.
Let's get it over with.
I can't move my legs, my fingers, my hands, so there's nothing I can do but sit back and hope I enjoy whatever hell he's about to put me through. His wings give a mighty beat, and we lurch upward in what feels like a 90-degree climb, leaving my stomach back at the lower altitude. He crests the top of the snow-dusted peaks, and we hang there for a breath of a second before he twists, diving back down at the same terrifying angle. It's the most horrifying and yet exhilarating moment of my life. Until he twists again, sending us into a spiral. My body is wrenched this way and that as he completes turn after turn, pulling us out of the dive only to bank so hard I swear the land becomes the sky, then repeats it all until my face splits into a grin. There is nothing like this.
I think we made our point.
He pulls us level, then banks right, starting up the valley that leads to the box canyon of the training fields. The sun is close to setting behind the peaks, but there's plenty of light to see the golden dragon up ahead, hovering as though it's waiting. Maybe it didn't choose a rider, but it will live to decide again next year. And that's all that matters. Or maybe it will see that we humans aren't so great after all.
Why did you choose me?
I have to know, because as soon as we land,
There are going to be questions.
Because you saved her.
Tarn's head inclines towards the golden as we approach, and she follows after us. Our speed slows. But I shake my head. Dragons value strength and cunning and ferocity in their riders. None of which defines me.
Please, do tell me more about what I should value.
Sarcasm drips from his tone as we pass over the gauntlet and crest the narrow entrance to the training fields. I suck in a sharp breath at the sight of so many dragons. There are hundreds gathered along the rocky edges of the mountain slopes behind the bleachers that were erected overnight. Spectators. And at the bottom of the valley, in the same field I'd walked only a couple of days before, are two lines of dragons facing each other.
They are divided between those still in the quadrant who chose in years past and those who chose today,
Tarn tells me.
We are the 71st bond to enter the fields.
Mom will be here, on the dais in front of the bleachers, and maybe I'll get more than a cursory glance, but her attention will mostly be on the 70 or so newly bonded pairs. A ferocious roar of celebration goes up among the dragons as we fly in, every head swinging our way, and I know it's in deference to Tarn. So is the parting of the dragons at the very center of the field, making room for Tarn to land. He releases the bands holding me in my seat, then hovers over the grass for a few wing beats, and I see the golden dragon flying furiously to catch up. How ironic. Tarn is the most celebrated dragon in the Vale, and I'm the most unlikely rider in the quadrant.
You are the smartest of your year. The most cunning.
I gulp at the compliment, brushing it off. I was trained as a scribe, not a rider.
You defended the smallest with ferocity. And strength of courage is more important than physical strength, since you apparently need to know before we land.
My throat tightens from his words, emotion forming a knot I have to swallow past. Oh, shit. I hadn't spoken those words. I'd thought them. He can read my thoughts.
See? Smartest of your year.
So much for privacy.
You'll never be alone again.
That sounds more like a threat than a comfort, I think. Of course, I knew that dragons maintain a mental bond with their riders, but the extent of it is more than a little daunting. Tarn scoffs in reply. The golden dragon reaches us, her wings beating twice as fast as Tarn's, and we land in the dead center of the field. The impact jars me slightly, but I sit up tall in the seat and even let go of the pommel ridges. See, I can hang on just fine when you're not moving. Tarn tucks his wings up and looks over his shoulder at me with an expression that's the closest thing to a dragon rolling his eyes that I've ever seen.
You need to dismount before I rethink my selection. Then tell the roll keeper.
I know what to do. I pull in a shaky breath. I just didn't think I'd be alive to do it. Surveying both options for dismount, I move right to shelter my ankle as long as possible. There are no healers allowed in the flight field, only riders. But hopefully someone thought to pack a medical kit because I'm going to need stitches and a splint. I scoot over the scales of Tarn's shoulder and, before I can lament the distance I'm about to have to jump on the wreckage of my ankle, Tarn shifts slightly, angling his front leg. There's a sound from the slopes that reminds me of muttering, if dragons mutter.
They do, and they are. Ignore it.
Again, there's no room for argument in his tone. Thanks, I whisper, then slide down on my butt like he's a bumpy piece of lethal playground equipment, taking the brunt of the impact with my left leg when I hit the ground.
That's one way to do it.
I can't stop the smile on my face, or the joy that stings my eyes at the sight of the other first years standing in front of their dragons. I'm alive, and I'm no longer a cadet. I'm a rider. The first step hurts like hell, but I pivot toward the Golden One, who is tucked in tight next to Taryn, surveying me with bright eyes as she flicks her feather tail. I'm glad you made it. Glad isn't even the right word. Thrilled, relieved, grateful. But maybe you should fly off the next time someone suggests you save yourself, eh? She blinks.
Maybe I was saving you.
Her voice is higher, sweeter in my mind. My lips part, and the muscles in my face go slack with shock. Didn't anyone tell you that you're not supposed to speak to humans who aren't your rider? Don't go getting yourself into trouble, Goldie, I whisper. From what I hear, dragons are pretty strict about breaking that rule. She simply sits, tucking her wings in, and tilts her head at me in that should-be-impossible angle that almost makes me laugh.
Holy hell! The rider of the red dragon to my right exclaims, and I turn toward him.
He's a first year from Claw Section 4th Wing, but I don't remember his name.
Is that?
He openly stares with fear-wide eyes at Taryn. Yeah, I say, smiling wider. He is. My ankle throbs, aches, and generally feels like it's going to come apart at any second as I limp across the wide field, heading for the small formation directly ahead of me. Behind me, wind sporadically gusts as more dragons land and their riders dismount to have their names recorded. But it's softer and softer as the line spreads farther down the field. Dusk falls and a series of mage lights illuminates the crowd in the bleachers and on the dais. In the very center, right above where the redhead from Parapet is recording roll, sits my mother, dressed in all her military finery, medals and all. Lest anyone forget exactly.